Hogansville today is a town of just over 3,000 people. In 1937, the same when Jim was born, it was the same size. Jim was the son of Norman and Clyde Truett Taylor. He barely knew his father, though, who left when Jim was about 18 months old. When Jim was a preteen, his mother married Jim Martin, who became, to him, a true and excellent dad. Even as a preteen, Jim was an accomplished piano player and was called upon to play for the Baptist Church and for school plays. And anybody who knows Jim is not surprised that he loved school and that he became a lifelong learner and that learning never ceased. It's safe to say that Jim's mom was a huge influence in his life and communicated to him her own zest for life. But in addition to Jim Martin, another influence and role model, father figure, if you will, was a man named Coach Mike Castranis. He was a deeply religious and pious man that Jim would write later and say that he had an enormous presence. And Coach Mike, as he was called, had been an all-SEC and an all-American tackle at the University of Georgia. And just in case you've forgotten it, Georgia's the national champion football team this year. Coach Mike took Jim under his wing, and he became a person that Jim would admire, and he would write about him in his autobiographical statement 60 years later. Jim worked summers in the textile mill when he was in high school. He had one job in a guest house turning over sheets. I didn't know what that meant, and Karen said, well, he was told that when a guest left the guest house, his role was to go up and not change the sheet, but just turn it over. He was also a YMCA summer camp counselor. After graduating from Hogansville High School in 1955, he enrolled in a school called the Alabama Polytechnic Institute that you may know better as Auburn University. Jim enrolled in the United States Air Force ROTC, and after graduating with a Bachelor of Science degree in mathematics, was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Air Force. He served there for 6.5 years. While in flight school, training to be a navigator, he married Beatrice Dittering, and from that union came two sons, Paul Martin Taylor and Michael James Taylor. Both Jim and Bea were active in church, with Jim teaching Sunday school and training union and serving as the church pianist wherever they happened to be. She served often as the church music director. Their marriage would last just a little over 19 years. He resigned his commission as a captain in the U.S. Air Force and re-entered Auburn and earned another bachelor degree in aerospace engineering. As a result of his work at Auburn, he was hired as a civilian to work for the Department of the Navy and moved to Washington, D.C., where he worked for the Naval Systems Command for 6 years and was recruited from the Navy Department by the Department of the Air Force. He worked in the Pentagon for 7.5 years, where he managed the budget and directed the research activities of the Air Force Systems Command at Wright Air Force Base. He rose rapidly in the civilian ranks at the Pentagon and reached the pay grade of GS-15, the civilian equivalent of a colonel. After leaving the Department of Defense, he continued consulting with government agencies and civilian companies who deal with government agencies, and he had some other employment opportunities as well, which he excelled. In 1983, Jim married Karen Romano, who brought two little girls into the new family, Amy Lee Romano, age 10, and Darcy Marie Romano, now Darcy Bailey, who at that time was 8 years old. Along the way, Jim found time to go to Auburn once again and earn a Master of Aerospace Engineering. Apparently that wasn't enough for him. And while he was in Washington, he enrolled in George Washington University, where he completed all the work for a Doctor of Science in Engineering and Applied Science, all except for the dissertation. And then he also went to Northern Virginia Community College in Sterling, Virginia, and earned an associate's degree of arts in music. Oh, And he also earned a Master of Science in Group and Individual Psychology from Marymount University. He wasn't finished yet. He audited several master's level courses at St. Michael's Seminary, and in 2009, he received a Doctor of Pastoral Counseling degree from Anderson Theological Seminary, summa cum laude, with highest honors at the age of 72. Nearly all this time, beginning when he was a youth and wherever the location, Jim engaged in church and in church ministries. Over the years, he taught Bible classes, served as a youth pastor, a music director, a paid position in a couple of churches, and the rest volunteer. He was in several administrative positions, filled the pulpit in numerous churches, and he even served as a prison chaplain. Upon moving to Peachtree City, he and Karen became extremely active and in the city's community emergency response team. And they were leaders in CERT, as it was called, under the oversight of the Peachtree City Police Department. Both received several certifications and received training from FEMA and other places. In his spare time, Jim became a counselor and chaplain for the Job Seekers Ordination, which is where I met him, he reminded me later, that he had called me. The Job Seekers was organized during a very difficult economic time in the country, and a number of people were out of work, including those who were professionals or had specialty degrees. And so Job Seekers was created to encourage people, they could network with folks and help them write resumes, and he had a part in all that. And they would have a devotional every time they met, a short devotional, 5 minutes or less, I was told, and by Jim. And so he arranged that, and that's how I first met him. He would become an appointed and state-certified police chaplain with the Peachtree City Police Department. And as you've heard, he served as an auxiliary chaplain, a volunteer chaplain, at Piedmont Fayette Hospital. Now, I had helped Jim become a police chaplain and told him about the training he would have to do, because I did that for 25 years. And I remember that he was doing that, and we went to a restaurant in Peachtree City called J. Christopher's for lunch. We're sitting there talking, and he said, you know, I really have an interest. I think I have an interest in hospital chaplaincy. He goes, but I don't know how to get into that. Do you have any advice? At that moment, at that very moment, the lead hospital full-time hospital chaplain at Piedmont Fayette Hospital walked in, and I waved at him. He came over, and I introduced him to Jim. That was a bit providential, I thought. So he served as a volunteer chaplain, and then he was accepted to clinical pastoral education at Emory University Hospital, and later he was hired as an associate chaplain, and then later when the hospital chaplain had decided to leave and to go to North Carolina, he became one of the full-time chaplains. He was a board-certified chaplain in several specialties by the College of Pastoral Supervision and Psychotherapy, and along with Chaplain Kim Holman, another full-time chaplain at Piedmont Fayette Hospital, was an instructor in the CPE program at Piedmont Fayette Hospital. He was the founder, as you've heard already, and convener of the Fayetteville chapter of the CPSP, and quite a number of his CPSP graduates did become board certified and today are employed by either hospices or hospitals because of his influence. Jim was a part of this church by this time, and he was raised a Baptist, and Karen was raised a Catholic, and so this was like, you know, somewhere in between, and so it fit, and they felt they enjoyed it, and they became a part. Well, Jim was very faithful, and I'm going to jump ahead just a minute and just tell you that later on, when he was the full-time chaplain and doing CPE, he had been with us for several years, and I decided that I was going to go and support him Really, that's all I wanted to do, was just support him in his ministry. And I thought, well, I'm going to take the chorus. It meets on Tuesday from 9 to 1. I have plenty of time for that. And so I didn't know I was going to have to go through a hospital orientation, but I did. I didn't know I was going to get shots, but I did. And then I'm sitting in the class, and it's at that moment while I'm in the class that a class that I thought was 10 weeks is actually 20 weeks. Oh, and by the way, you have to do 300 clinical hours on the floor during that 20 weeks. You have to do a verbatim essentially every other week. Oh, and there are book reports to write. Lots of books to write. And I truly did not know whether or not I should just, you know, pass out or fake a heart attack or something and get out of the class. But I thought, well, let's see how it goes. And that's actually where I met Mindy, and I would meet Kim a little later on. And so I stayed the whole first unit, and then did three more. And it was thoroughly enjoyable. But I remember telling Jim, I said, I know it could be, some people might think it's a little awkward, but I want you to know that I can be a follower in the hospital. You're the master and I'm the disciple. And he took that seriously. I took that seriously, and it worked out really well. In 2008, in this church, in this diocese actually, Jim was licensed as a Eucharistic minister, and he entered the process for holy orders or ordination. 2009, he completed the training required by the state to become, by the Georgia Peace Officer Standards and Training Council, to be certified as a law enforcement chaplain, served honorably with the police department for several years. In 2010, he was ordained as a deacon, and on June the 11th, 2011, he was elevated to the priesthood. And in 2016, he was installed as the canon for hospital and spiritual care ministries in the Diocese of the Mid-South. Karen also would be active. She would become a Dossian Commission minister in hospital ministries, and she currently serves as the chair of the Cathedral Council. After struggling with some health problems, Jim very reluctantly retired from Piedmont Fayette Hospital, and after a process, one of his own students, Mindy Littlejohn, that you've heard from, was hired as his replacement as a chaplain, and he was very excited about that when it happened. She's a product of Jim's classes. Jim recently completed work on a chaplain's manual, unpublished as of this date, during his retirement period. Oh, and did I mention that during all the other things he did in his career, he managed to find time to write 6 books. With all his accomplishments, with the outstanding resume he has, Jim Taylor, Father Jim to most of the folks here at church, really was an incredibly humble man. He never mentioned his accomplishments to anyone here until he absolutely had to during the process toward ordination. And after his initial ordination interview, and it was a process, one of the men questioning him said after he left the room, "I think I've just met the smartest man I've ever known." I'd known Jim for years before I learned quite accidentally that he was a member of the Mensa Society, the oldest high IQ society in the world. And after I heard that, I didn't know what to say to him. I mean, what do you say to one of the smartest men in the world? But he was not puffed up. He was neither insecure nor was he boastful. He was perfectly happy being who he was, whether that was Chaplain Taylor, Father Jim, or just plain Jim. He wrote poetry, Jim did, mostly to Karen. He was artistic. He was creative. He was intellectual. He was a man of integrity. He was a learner, a teacher, a friend, a mentor to many. He was a painter. He had a passion for reading. And, like his mother, he had a zest for life. And Jim did have a sense of humor, although oftentimes it was dry. And he was trying to explain to someone what he used to do when he was working for the Air Force and the Navy, and they were really impressed. And he goes, "Oh, look, it's not like it was rocket science." And then he said, "Oh, wait, yeah, I guess it was." Jim leaves a powerful and a profound legacy. Over the years, I've submitted that except in exceptional cases, that most people have a legacy that follows them that's found only in two places. One is in family. Our family we leave behind is our legacy. In addition to the four children I mentioned earlier, there's a son-in-law, Mike, a daughter-in-law, Jessica, there's Taylor, Bailey, Elena. I have a granddaughter who's Eliana, and I looked at that, and I'm trying to pronounce her name. Elena Taylor, J.C. Taylor, and Ethan Taylor. And, of course, there's Karen. But there's also a church family that has benefited from him, his hospital family, his CPSB family, and, of course, there's the dudes that are also family. The other legacy that we leave behind is influence. And like a family line, influence goes on through the generations, person after person, and Jim had copious amounts of influence on a great many people. You know, when I enrolled in Jim's CPE class, I later discovered that Jim's supervisor did not want me in his class because of our relationship outside the hospital. I didn't know when I went to see him and to tell him that just treat me like a student and, you know, that he had already had the warning shot fired by the supervisor. And so he said he would do that, and he did all 4 years. But then, in one of the later units, his supervisor was going to come and evaluate his teaching. And two of the class were supposed to be picked to do verbatims, which I guess for most would be a case study. And so, but also what we found out is that the supervisor didn't really care what we did. He was there to evaluate Jim. And so I went to Jim privately and I said, "Look, I want you to pick me as one of those people." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because I think I have a thicker skin. And if you need to really run me through the ringer, I want you to know that I'm volunteering for that." I said, "I want you to do well with this evaluation. So whatever you have to do, you know, grill me however you want to. Please choose me and let me go first so that whoever comes after me will know what to expect." He said, "Okay." Well, I didn't know what I was asking for. I mean, I was grilled and fried and baked and boiled, shaken and not stirred. And even though I was prepared for it, when it was all over, I was like, "Wow." Then the supervisor called a break, and person number two didn't ever even have to go to be. I guess he found out what he wanted. But that was an honor for me to help in that small way. I, too, became a board-certified chaplain, and I, too, do some small things at Piedmont Fed Hospital now. But whenever I go into a hospital, and hospital chaplaincy is a lot different than pastoral ministry. But I think I'm still a pastor. I still have a pastor's heart, at least when I see patients that I don't know. But certainly when I see patients that I do know, Jim's influence is still there too. And I'm an on-call guy, and that's never, normally if the phone rings, it's never good. And on the way, driving there, whether it's, you know, on the weekend or 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever, I trust on the teachings and the training I received to go with me. And Jim Jim had me and he had Mindy for all four units. And so we're greatly influenced by him. Earlier this afternoon, those who arrived a few minutes early were treated to a short video presentation about Jim. And the background music was Clair de Lune, which translated from the French means moonlight. It's a poem that was written about 1865, but it was set to music in 1890 by Claude Debussy. And when Jim played that song on the piano, as he often did, he played it for Karen as a love song from him to her. And I think I'm going to ask that after the dismissal, that those of you who haven't seen it and want to, it's about 5 minutes, I think I'll ask that it be run again so you can see it. That's okay. I too saw Jim on Good Friday. And it was very clear that he had one foot in this world and the other one in the other. But you know, knowing Jim the way I know him, as long as I've known him, for a number of years now, as a Christian, as a chaplain, as a priest, I'm not sure there's any better day to depart from this life for a man like that than Easter Sunday. And that's exactly what happened. On Easter Sunday, also known as Resurrection Sunday, 2022, at the age of 85, by about 10 days, the Reverend Canon Dr. James Taylor, BCCC, BCPC, and two or three other initials that I don't remember, and I'm not even going to try to do all the degrees after his name. We'd be here till 3:30 in the morning. Became absent from the body and present with the Lord. And of all of the accolades and accomplishments and honors that Jim received in his life, all of those paled in comparison and were reduced to insignificance when he heard these words from Jesus. Well done. Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Well done indeed. Well done. Thank you, Father, for the privilege and honor of walking alongside this man in whatever capacity we knew him. Thank you for his influence that continues long past this day and long past many of our own lifetimes. Thank you that you loaned him to us for a while. And may we understand that the greatest accomplishment in all the world is really and truly not found in degrees or positions, but in knowing you and serving you. And Jim understood that. And he lived his life in Jesus' name. Amen. It is our custom.